Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Jeremy Conway. How are you doing, my man?
And I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here. And yeah, it's great.
Yeah, no, likewise, mate. And I am. And honestly, I'm looking forward to this one. And I know we were just chatting before we hit record there. And I was talking about your LinkedIn content and personal brand. So we can probably dive into that. And I remember when we did this podcast planning call, Jeremy, we came on. I think your assistant or your executive assistant was there. And I can't remember what we were talking about, but I think we were just laughing constantly for about half an hour, 40 minutes. It probably wasn't the most like structured podcast planning call, but it was a lot of fun, mate. So it was good. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. I can't laugh at it whatsoever. Life's about getting some enjoyment out of it, right? It's scary sometimes.
Yeah, no, definitely. But Jeremy, for the listeners that don't know who you are, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. If I get any of this wrong or I pronounce anything wrong, feel free to correct me or shout at me afterwards. But started off, you was in the US Army for 8.5 years, almost a decade, and worked your way all the way up to Staff Sergeant. Then when you came out of the Army, you started off as a network and systems engineer. You were then a security engineer for the NSA. You then went on to got into security as a security production manager. You were also spent some time at the University of Alabama as a professor. You then had various management roles and an owner role at Conway Group. And currently, you hold two positions. So you're the owner of a CrossFit gym, which we've just been talking about before we hit record. And you were also the chief executive of Mad Security. So sounds like you're a busy man, and welcome to the show, mate.
Yeah, I appreciate it. The only correction I'll make there is it was NASA, not the NSA.
Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. A little different. Like, it's still government organization. Yeah. One's a little more incognito, and one's about sharing information. But one went to the moon. The other one talks about, like, how do we get to the moon, right?
Yeah, we're too far off. But maybe we'll have to decide whether to edit that bit out or keep it in. But maybe we'll just keep it in. It's fine.
Interesting, though, when I was at NASA, we did work with the NSA on several things.
Okay, I knew that. That's what I meant. That's why I said it.
Works for me.
Jeremy, nice to have you on, mate, and welcome to the show. It'd be nice to unpack your journey from doing well in the Army, coming out of the Army, then getting into security, and then progressing on to being an entrepreneur and a business owner. I know I mentioned a minute ago, I'd like to talk about the personal branding because you're very lively on LinkedIn and you do it very well, mate. You really do. So I'd love to get into that. I think the importance of that is going up and up for business owners, for cybersecurity professionals, for everyone. But before we do, Matt, I know I've done you a bit of an intro, but I'll start where I always start, which is, who are you? What do you get up to? What's a day in the life of Jeremy like these days?
Yeah, you gave my history pretty well. I'll tell you that when I was a kid, I was a C student. I was just bored doing the things that I do, got in a lot of trouble. Grew up in a town in Texas that really the only thing you could do is get in the oil industry. And I knew that wasn't good for me. So I joined the Army, got in there, got disciplined, got a lot of life lessons about motivation, self-mindset, things like that. Put in challenging situations that really changed the way I viewed the world. When I was younger, I viewed the world from a victim mentality. When I went to the Army, I learned that was incorrect. And I viewed the world of like abundance. And you can do whatever you set yourself out to. You're mostly restricted to the things that are controlled in your mind, right? That we would get into these exercises in the military. And I'd be like, there's absolutely no way I'm going to be able to do this. And then you would do it. And you're like, holy crap. Like, this is awesome. And you'd have your teammates with you. And there was just so much goodness to that. And it taught me a lot. I had to exit the military because my third child, which is a daughter, she was born while I was out of the country. I was supposed to be out of the country for about 9 days. It ended up being multiple months. And my wife was like, hey, I committed to the family. I would have still been in the Army. I loved it so much. But I chose my family, got out. Yeah. Went to work in network security and stuff, did some really fun stuff, ended up going to NASA, and we were on a small team that ended up building the NASA Security Operations Center. So I got to see nothing turn into something, and I learned a lot about working with people. I learned a lot about technology, the overcoming of things. I used the lessons that I learned in the Army about like never quit, just keep going, that kind of thing, applied it to something, and we built something really great. And then, like all good things, the government got in the way and said, hey, there's a lot of money going into Huntsville, Alabama. That's where it was at. We're going to move that SOC over into California. Too much about me. I'm a Southern boy, right? Moving to California was not an option. It was just not going to be an option. They'd have flogged me if I moved out there. They'd be like, this guy doesn't work. I stayed. I transitioned into some product management, learned a lot of cool stuff. The CEO was really great there. I watched him do some really cool stuff. He wanted to get purchased in 2 to 3 years. I had some incentives if that happened. We sold our product back then to McAfee Intel. So I took that, started my first business in cybersecurity. I said, hey, I'm being a lifestyle business. I'm going to work on 6 months a year and I'm on vacation 6 months a year. That worked for about 6 months. And then I had so much work that I had to hire people. And it was like, oh, it's a real business now. And that started my journey in entrepreneurship. Ran up into Mad Security, merged my company 2 or 3 years into it. We had some just disagreements on what the company should do and stuff. I ended up taking over ownership, became the CEO, sold off a piece of the business, transitioned it from a value-added reseller that you would commonly see in that. We were like a very big government reseller selling technology and stuff, transitioned to managed services because that's what I know. I know security operations, SOC, developing skills, things like that. How do I use technology to detect the bad guys and go after them and figure that stuff out, right? Help protect infrastructure. That's what I've done a lot of. So did that, and that's where I am today. And I tell my company all the time, we're on a journey to build the best defensive-based security operations center in the world, and we're going to do it one client at a time. And it's going to take a long time, and that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. Listen, there's absolutely so much to unpack. We talked about mindset of the army. You covered selling a business to McAfee. You covered winning so much work that you were like, I've got to work a bit. This is getting ridiculous. You're winning a lot of business. You talked about taking, long story short, there's a lot you've covered there, which I'd like to get into. You obviously did really well in the army, mate, to get to the level you were at. So it'd be nice to get into that. So you've come out of the army, done very well. That transition, be nice to talk about the transition into the commercial world, but then also your transition into being an entrepreneur. They're two massive leaps. There'll be a lot of people listening that are either coming out the forces and coming into the commercial world, or maybe they're going through that transition now, or so on and so forth. Is there anything you'd advise about when you came out of the army? Anything now that you wish you knew back then for the listeners, mate?
Oh, for sure. So, you know, we thought a lot about my successes. For every success, there was 100 failures. So the biggest thing that I learned in the military, what works in the military doesn't work in the commercial world. And that's soft skills, right? So in the military, it's very structured. Everybody's in there and everybody knows that, like, when stuff needs to get done, if you don't do what needs to happen, people could die, lose lives, things like that. So it's a different kind of stake thing. And you're able to treat people a little more direct and a little more public. So I remember one of the things that made me great in the military made me very ineffective in the commercial world. And that was, I've always been a person, I don't have the fear node of speaking up, speaking my mind. Like, it just, it doesn't, the way I see the world is this, I am who I am.
Yeah.
I am perfectly fine being judged, and that's okay as well. Like, you can either like me or not, or you can be in between. And you know what? We could still be on this planet together and be humans. It's perfectly fine. I appreciate that. So in the military, somebody steps out of line, you're in a formation, you're like, hey, what's wrong with you? Do this, do push-ups, this, right? Whatever that is, you will spot correct in front of everybody. I transitioned into the civilian world, and that does not work. Bringing attention to somebody around their peers crushes motivation, crushes their soul. It completely does the exact opposite that happens in the military. I remember I used to tell people, it's not like we'd be running in formations and somebody would drop out and you would be like, what is wrong with you? Get back in there, push yourself. And it's a different kind of motivation. It's that get in there and you can do it kind of thing. When somebody falls out in a team, in a corporate structure, it is not seen the same way when they are called out like that in folks, right? So what you got to do is pull them aside and say, hey, what's going on? Where's the skill gap here? Is an expectation issue? Is a skill issue? And you work individually. And it's actually extremely effective. Like, it works really well. But when I transitioned from the military to the civilian world, that was one of the biggest lessons I had to learn, because I was not effective as a manager or as a leader by doing that. It's a lesson I had to learn multiple times. I had people leave. I had people refuse to work for me. I had these types of things. They just, I can't be in a room with this guy. He's too intense.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so it was very ineffective. So what I would say is, when you're transitioning from the military, just have that mindset of like, and I'll tell you this, there's a difference between kindness and niceness. What I mean by kindness and niceness is, in the commercial world, out here in the real world, 90% of the populace lives, right? Let's just be clear. 10% live in that military thing, about 90% is it. So we have to live in that world. Being kind is not a popularity contest. It's being transparent. It is telling folks what is the expectation. What is the gap? What is the frustration? Being nice is avoiding that and acting like it's not there and trying to be popular. So a kind leader is somebody that will address a situation, but do it in an effective manner. Like, we don't say people are lazy. We say, hey, you've done this and this, and it's not met my expectations, right? Because you can't fix lazy, but you can fix it when you tell them what that is. In the military, you're like, you're lazy, get in there, right? It's just different. The tip is the same. The outcomes are different. And it's just learning that not everybody's built that way. And that's okay. And you just got to adopt that. And you're like, oh, that makes sense. And you know what? I think if I would have known that even in the military, knowing when to turn one on and the other off, because when I was in the military, I joined when I was 18. I literally did 1 year in college, went to the military and very young, made a bunch of mistakes. Got out in my late 20s, 26 years old, 20. So transitioning over, I had to learn that. If I would have known what I know today back in the military, I'd have been more effective there, because there's a time and a place for both.
Yeah.
That kind of gets your answer there, what you're looking for?
It did. No, it did, mate. Thank you. Was it hard to navigate that and tone it down when you had to? Did it take a bit of getting used to? What was it like?
Oh, for sure. Everybody has their DNA, right? Yeah. What we really realize is that when you're successful, right? In the military, man, I moved up the ranks really fast, ended up getting in charge of a lot of things, experiencing stuff. It was just fun. Then all of a sudden, I hit a brick wall in my progress in life. I measured success. I hit the commercial world, and I was like, man, I can't progress. I can't get these things. I know I'd be good at this. I know I'd be good at that. And in my mind, I'm like, why don't they see this? And it held me back. So you have to do self-reflection and pause and be like, hey, what are the constraints that are stopping me from meeting their expectations? A lot of questioning. A lot of frustration, just like, why is it seen this way? You know, why? What's funny is, why doesn't the universe revolve around me? Why don't they think like I do? And you got to realize that it just doesn't work that way, right? And you have to accept it. You know, that's what I would say is that it was very frustrating, and it took a lot of work. It took a lot of reading. It took a lot of asking people that were ahead of me, mentors, folks that I admired, and saying, what do you do? And not only that, but just watching, right? Sometimes, even if they won't talk to you, if you pick somebody and you just look at them, you're like, what are they doing that is different than what I'm doing? And you're like, let me just exhibit those characteristics and see if I can't get those kinds of results. And it works, right? So you don't even have to know certain folks, because there's a lot of great people out there that's never going to give me a conversation. But if I observe their actions, I can mimic some of those, right? Mm-hmm. And just do that. And all of a sudden, you're like, the real just changes a little bit.
Yeah, mate, I really like that. And I don't want the listeners to overlook that, because I really like your mentality. And you're like, I'm not progressing. What's going on? What am I doing? What do I need to change? What am I missing? What are they doing that I'm not? Like, and it goes back to what you said about 15 minutes ago, is you're not having a victim's mentality, or you're not going, oh, it's not fair, or life's not fair. You're going, right, what have I got to do to get ahead? And I think right now, I think that kind of mentality is more relevant than ever, because everything's changing so fast. Some people are thriving. Some people are getting laid off. Some people get on and off the jobs market really quick. Some people don't. And also, to your point about just looking at what some of the people that were doing really well doing, I can relate to that in recruitment. When I first started, you just sit next to, we call it billing in recruitment, you just sit next to the top biller. Whatever he or she's doing, you just copy. You start when they start, you finish when they, you just say what they say, and you can learn. And whether it's a security engineer, a recruiter, a business owner, you can learn so much like that, mate, can't you?
Turn off the noise. If somebody is giving you advice and are not in a position or where you want to progress to, you have to take it with a grain of salt. And the reason for that is there's so many people that actually care about you, that they see that what you'll find is success is the duration and the amount of suffering that you're able to go through to get the bigger result, right? What you find with very successful people is they have this high tolerance of pain, suffering. Like, I can deal with this problem until it is resolved over not a 3-day period, but maybe a 3-year period, maybe a 5-year period, because the hockey stick principle, right? The people that care about you, your mom, your friends, all those folks, they see you in pain and they're giving you advice to relieve that pain. They're giving you an out. They're saying, hey, it's okay. But you have to remember that they're giving you advice and they have a tough situation and they're trying to help you resolve a pain, but not achieve your goal. I would say find people that have achieved it and done it and just talk to them or just watch, right? And see what they're doing and just understand that most of the advice that is given by the folks that you surround yourself with are to help you relieve that pain and not achieve your goal. So be careful about following those things, right? Like I say all the time, a lot of non-wealthy people will give you investment advice. There's a reason they're not wealthy, right? Everybody knows these things, but you're like, if I wanted really good investment advice, I'm going to Warren Buffett, right? I'm like, hey, how did you do this? I'm watching what they do. And that would be what I'd say is take everybody. There's in everybody's feedback, there is some truth to it. But is it the truth that you want it to be to achieve the goal you're going at? Or is it the truth that you want it to be to live your life? And either way is fine. If you're like, hey, I'm going to give up on my goal because I don't like this pain anymore, that's okay. Just know that's what you've chosen to do.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. I couldn't agree more. I think take advice from the people that are smashing it in the area of life that you want to smash it in, whether it's finances, whether it's mindset, whether it's cybersecurity, whether it's running a fit gym or a cybersecurity, whatever it is, take advice from people that are actually doing it and doing it well. Because I think some stuff in life is pretty counterintuitive. And you see, I think, you've got to do that. I really like the point as well about the suffering. I saw something. It said something like, if you can delay your gratitude for about a year, you're going to be pretty successful. I think if you can delay it for 3 or 4 years, you're going to be like abnormally successful. I think if you can delay it for about 10, you're probably going to change the world. And it's like that delayed gratification does get you everywhere. But you know what it's like, man? Everyone wants it now in this day and age.
One of the common statements that many of my mentors that are 10 years ahead of me tell me is this what? People will see you as an overnight success, but it'll be 15 years overnight success. All they see is the hockey stick. They don't see that. I've been in cybersecurity business ownership for almost 15 years now, and I'm still nowhere near where I know we're going to be. And when we get there, they'll be like, where'd they come from? They're overnight. And you're like, yeah, 15, 20 years overnight.
Do you know what as well, Jeremy? Like, you know, you said about taking advice from the people that are actually doing it. I think it's so important, yes, to do that. And spending time with the right sorts of people as well. Mate, I'm not just saying this because we're on the pod now, but when I last spoke to you, I was getting like hyped up and energized, and I'm feeling it now. Like when you're around people that have got that good energy, that good vibe, are doing well, like there's some stats about you, the average of the 5 people that you hang around with the most in your life. And I think it's so true. And I think everyone's got a mate where you go and see him, you're going to have a drink with him or her, and they take you the other way. Like I've got one or two mates that I've known since I was really young, and there's always something going on. They've always got like some problems, and it's like those ones, they're great and they're not, but they bring you down. And I've got mates that are like you that really hype me up. So I think who you're spending your time with as well, I think has a huge effect long term.
For sure, because the biggest enemy of anybody's success is their mind. And if you are in that the most of the time where you're dealing with other people's problems and you're seeing that, you will view the world through that lens. When you're around other people that have a abundance mindset where they see obstacles as opportunities, you will then see the world in that lens, right? So balancing it out. Now, what I have heard a lot of people say is get rid of those friends. You don't have to get rid of those friends. If you have a strong enough mindset that you know when you walk into that room, that is what they're going to present. And the relationship, the friendship is more meaningful, and you just filter it. You're like, hey,
yeah.
And you try to influence them, right? So now if you can't negotiate with yourself where you have that mindset and you feel yourself drawing in it, the fastest way to correct that is to separate that relationship. But if you can just know that when I go see that friend, that mate, as you said, and you know that they're experiencing right in these things, and it's going to be something that, you know, that's going to come up, you just be there for them. And no, that's not how you see the world, right? I don't technically agree with everybody that says, hey, you got to cut those relationships off. I think that's a great advice for 90% of the populace. But if you're strong enough, you can help those people too. And you just got to know that that's how they see the world, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. As long as you're not totally and utterly like absorbing everything they say and taking it seriously. Like I've got one mate who's a bit, I won't name him, but he's quite negative. And I'll look at him across the room when he's being negative and he can see me looking. And we actually make a joke of it because he knows that I'm thinking, shut up, mate. And he just clocks it. And so, yeah, I think that's what if you can break that, you're not taking it too seriously, he or she is the way that they are, and you just roll with it. But yeah, I think if you can get that balance right. Yeah, because it does seem a bit harsh because I've heard that advice as well. You should avoid them. They're like secondhand smoke. You can't help but breathe. But it's like, whoa, I've known that fella for 25 years. I can't just not talk to him.
You'll find is over time, you will naturally separate. Right? And that real friend will go an extended period of time and not talk to you. It's just a different kind of thing. Now, if there's a dependency involved there, then it's different. And you'll evaluate that, right? But I agree. There's people that I still talk to that I know for 20 years or so, even back in the military, and they're not on the same path I am, right? And then I've had my path. For most people, they can't actually make that separation. That is not bad advice. But if you're a strong person and you have it in your mind, you can do it. But just know that it's like you want to get fit, hang around fit people. You want to not, you like want to go out and have parties and joke and have stuff, go hang out with those people, right? Because there will be peer pressure associated with both, yeah. right? Yeah. Your fit friends are gonna be like, hey, meet me at the gym, let's do these things. The people that want to go party and have something, hey, let's go out for a drink, let's do these things. Both of them are time sucks. And the only thing that you have that you can't replace is time. So where you say no to your negative friends and just have like that little meeting every so often and everybody's good, then keep it. If you can't, then cancel that membership, or cancel that friendship. Right? You don't have to be mean about it. Just back it off slowly and it'll naturally dissolve.
Yeah, no, cool, mate. No, good advice. All right, Jeremy. So we've talked a bit about mindset there. We've talked about transitioning out of the army. The next huge transition I want to talk about is when you've gone, so you've come out of the army, you're in security, you're working on an employed basis, like the majority of people, and you've taken that leap you've sold your business to McAfee. This is the first thing that happened, yeah? You and your partner, or you were high up in a business and that got sold to McAfee?
So what happened was when I was at NASA, we had a relationship with a company, and that company, I did a lot of R&D for them while we were there. When they left, they knew I was going to be unhappy. And I was just going to reach out to them and said, hey, would you like to come work for me? And I was like, let's hear what you have to say. And the offer that was given to me was, hey, I want to get this business sold. When you were doing R&D, we accelerated revenue by these things, these opportunities opened. I would love to bring you on board. If I bring you on board, I will give you some payouts based off of a three-year, a four-year, a five-year acquisition. So I didn't have any equity in the company, more to say I had an upside opportunity. I watched this guy operate. I got to see a really great CEO do what he did. And his business got purchased by McAfee Intel in 3 years. So I got a nice little check. And I took that nice little check and was like, I'm employable anywhere, right? We can always be, when you're good, you can find work. It just is what it is. So I was like, I could take this money, go buy a bunch of stuff or whatever. Or like, I could just take this money and start a company. And I was like, you know what? I think I just want to work like a few months a year. And I had a great opportunity to do some red teaming stuff for a very known person out in Seattle and their family. And I took that job and I was the first one. And then it led to a bunch of other stuff and it became a business. But my mindset was this, is that I never worried about going broke. Like I hear entrepreneurs like, oh, we're gonna go broke. Here's what I figured is like in life, every time I failed, I was able to get back to wherever I was 10 times faster because I learned it. So I was like, if I go broke and I spend all this money, I could get a job and then I could try again. And I still have that philosophy right now today. Like I don't make risky decisions just because I feel like I'm confident I can build it back, because I've built a lot and like it would suck to lose all this. But I also know in my mind that if I did lose it all, it's just more reps to get back to where I was. And I'll be able to do it in a lot less time because I know where all those little bodies are buried and the landmines lie. I just know where that stuff is. You can see it faster. So that's how I took the leap. I was like, it's okay to fail. I've always been okay with failure because I don't see it as failure. Because I think I watched a video several years ago on Kobe Bryant. He said, failure does not exist. And I was like, you know what? He is so right. The only time you fail is when you quit. Failure doesn't exist. Only learning occurs. If you learn from it, you didn't fail. And I adopted that. That dude, if you study him, he was amazing in his mindset and what he did. He had a work ethic that nobody else had. And it was outstanding.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. You're never really starting again because you've got that blueprint. One of my other mates who's done pretty well in business used to always say that to me. And I love that because I think that having that mindset allows you to push forward. I think it probably means you're probably not as stressed. You're probably, anxiety levels are probably a lot lower than the majority of people's out there because you're never really starting again. Let's say, even if it'd be a nightmare if you did lose everything because you've achieved a lot, but if you lost everything, there's no way it would take you. You've got the blueprint. You had to start a business, you had to set it up to incorporate, to recruit people, you've got a network. It's like, bang, you'd just be off to the races. Yeah, you never, and you can relate it to anything. Like if you get laid off as a security engineer and you've been a security engineer for 10 years, you're not starting again. You've just been laid off. You'll get back, and if your mindset's right, you'll be fine probably this time next year. And it's the same mentality at whatever level of life you're at. So I really like that, mate. That's, yeah, it's cool.
The one thing that nobody on this earth can take from you is your skills. So as you acquire these skills, they can take your money, they can put you in all this stuff. But if you have that skill set, like they can't take that from you. Nobody can take that from you. So what I tell people, especially that are employees and stuff, is like, hey, if you want to balance this equation out, work your butts off, put a little bit of reserve back that you feel comfortable, that balances out your risk to achieve what you want to achieve. So if it's 90 days of expenses, if it's a year, if it's 10 years, it doesn't matter. Whatever makes you feel good, where you no longer worry about making this work, right? And then you know what? You just go all in on your career and you become the best at what you are trying to do and build that skill set, knowing that, let's just say you work for a evil corp that fires you. Okay, you have this skill set, you have this East thing, you're going to find good corp and it's going to be okay. Just build those skills, balance it out. If you're worried about being laid off or you're worried about that, what it is, just come in your mind, how long can I struggle before it's okay? Just same thing, how long can I suffer before I get my reward? That pain. So just pay you into a door in that time frame, put that back and just know that's the safety net. That's what you got. So I would tell people early in their careers, build whatever that, if that's 30 days, 90 days, whatever, focus on saving and building that up so that you can jump on opportunities and take that calculated risk, because that's when you get high payoff, right? Your anxiety, because if the thing burns down in 30 days, it doesn't matter, because I still got this and I've got this new skill.
Yeah, thanks, mate. And taking a longer term approach and having a longer time horizon on things, I think you said something, you said, as long as you don't quit, you only really fail when you quit, is what you said. I think it was a Kobe Bryant quote. And I think that's so true. And I can relate that to, you can relate that to investing in stocks. You can relate that to the S&P. If you put money in the S&P 500, 20, 30 years ago, there'll be loads of time. If you checked it every day, you'd be stressed out your mind. It'll be up and down. You'd be making money. You'd be losing money. But if you put it in there, forgot about it, and looked at it in 25 years, you'd be very wealthy. And this is, I can relate that to what you're saying in terms of running a business or building a cybersecurity career. You'd be putting fires out left and center, and people will leave and people will come back and all the rest of it. But over a long enough time horizon, if you just stick to your routine and keep your mindset and just keep drilling away, it's a similar sort of investment and payoff.
Yeah, life, people want to believe it goes like this. Nice. This is what it really looks like. That is what it looks like. And to be honest, that's actually what makes life fun. You cannot have super highs without super lows. If everything was normal, it'd be boring. It'd be mediocre. So if you just anticipate that, and here's what I did, man, I get stressed. Anxiety level goes through the roof, and I'm like, why am I feeling this way? I just reflect, and I'm like, you know what? I've put myself in this situation, and it's going to be okay. And I just rationalize what it is and know that the reason I feel like this is because I am challenging myself. This is hard. If it was easy, everybody would do it. And you just got to be okay with it being right. Business is actually very simple, but simple does not imply easy. Simple, business is hard. Being very successful in a career, being in the top 10% in your career path is simple. You know what you need to do. You need to do the work. You need to study. You need to do the reps, figure it out, right? You need to do the work. Simple, but it is hard and it's disciplined, right? If you do it over time, you'll get there. I think there's a quote that says to be in the top 2% or 10% of everything, it takes 10,000 hours. Here's a really funny thing. I've also heard that it only takes 20 hours to be in the top 80% of all that work. So going from 80 to that top is just huge amount, because nobody's willing to put that much more work into it. So that's what it means by, can you just struggle a little longer than the next person?
Yeah, no, thanks, mate. On the bit about the anxiety thing, mate, I get anxious as well. And I, whatever happens, right, I used to think it was when if I'd had a few drinks on the weekend, a few glasses of wine or a few beers, I used to think, oh, that's why I'm getting anxious on a Monday. But since I've got a bit older, I drink a lot less now. And long story short, I always get anxious on a Monday morning. And sometimes things can be going really well and I'll still get really anxious. But what I found is the minute I put one foot in front of the other and actually start taking really hyper-focused action for that first 2-3 hours of Monday morning, that's what relieves it for me. If I'm just dilly-dallying around, that's when my anxiety creeps in. But if I just do something, it just goes away.
Right. A lot of people believe that the cure for anxiety is a plan. That's not true. It helps. The execution of the plan is where the anxiety goes away, right? It's good to have a plan, but if you're just thinking about the plan, you're trying to figure it out, and you're trying to get started, there's even more anxiety. What you got to do is just do it. I'm a big Andy Frisella fan. He's got this thing called the Power Five. And you just write down the 5 things you need to accomplish every day, and you do it the day before, and it just takes all the anxiety out, right? You're like, oh, you know what? Tomorrow, for me to be successful, I need to do these 5 things. That doesn't mean that's the only thing you do all day, but if you do those 5 things, you win. And that has changed my life. I've followed that for the last 4 or 5 years, and I'm telling you, man, every day, I've got a little book right here beside my desk that I write down the 5 things I'm going to do every single day, and I do it the night before. And when I execute that, It's great. And you know what? The days that I don't get all five things, I know I negotiate with myself. And yeah, I could have done better. But at the same time, I look back and he talks about this. And I look and I'm like, hey, on Tuesday, I didn't get all of them done, but all the other days I did. So that week I won. That month, like I might have lost a week, but I won the month. 12 months, I might have lost a month, but I won the whole year. And you get momentum from it, right? It's just something very powerful about not just having the plan, but just taking that step and then also recording that you did it, because you can get lost in the busyness. So I highly recommend people, like, they have the Power 3, but I do the Power 5. I learned it from Andy Frisella on his MFCO project and all that stuff. Like, it's something I listened to and I'm like, used it and I love it. My company, like, my employees do 5 tasks every day. They write it down what they're doing, right? And it just changes everything.
Yeah, I like that. I like having something like that that's easy to follow, and you stick to it over time, and the compound effect is bigger than you think. I like stuff like that, mate. It's good. 15 minutes ago, when you were talking about going into that company and you got that nice payday and that gave you the vehicle to get going on your own. Oh, by the way, when you said earlier, you were like, oh, I'm just going to work a few months of the year. There's no way you're working a few months a year and then relaxing.
You tell yourselves these things, right? And at that point in my life, I really believed that's what was going to happen.
No, mate. If I'd have been with you then, I'd have told you straight away, no chance.
No, cool.
What I was going to say, Jeremy, is as you said, you was with a great CEO and you saw the way that he ran that business. Now, you got a nice payday out of that, which was great. But I'm imagining even if you'd have been there for free, being around that person and seeing them run that business, I'm imagining there was some valuable lessons in there. I don't know if this might be a difficult one to answer, but what did that CEO do that was good that could help me and that could help other people listening?
So I think what I learned a lot from that gentleman was he had a vision of where he wanted to be in life. And he had this vehicle called this company. And what I saw him do was he constructed a vision so great that if he accomplished his, everybody inside of that company would recognize their visions. So what I saw was this, is that a CEO, as a leader in a business, one of the biggest things that you can do is create a vision so big that no matter who joins your company, they are able to meet their life goals. An engineer's, hey, I need to take care of my family. I need to be able to go to these things. I want to buy a nice car. I want to have a nice house. Their vision needs to be able to fit inside. They need to see that progression. So that's what he did with me. He's, hey, I think that if you help me get to this goal and we build this company together, there's this carrot changes your life and it's in the trajectory that you want it to be. And I saw him do that individually with every single person in that company. And when he did his company addresses and stuff, he always cast that vision. It was so big that we could all fit our dreams inside of it. When an employee has a vision that's bigger than the company, there's friction, right? There's no friction when I can just, if I'm good at my job, I'm going to get what I want. It's when I'm good at my job and there's no way for me to get what I want causes friction. So I learned, I think that's one of those fundamental skills was watching him operate. I was like, wow, you have to have a vision so big that everybody can fit in it. And then you start looking at some of the bigger companies and you read like the book, Good to Great, things like that. You realize that those guys and gals had that exact same ability, right? Where they had such a mindset of abundance, no matter what they were doing at another time, everybody could succeed if we all worked together. And it reduce the friction. So that was probably the biggest lesson I learned from him.
Yeah, cool, mate. Yeah. And so a real strong ability to articulate that vision really clearly on a consistent basis. And I'm imagining as well, when you're around someone like that, I'm imagining you'll just jump through hoops for them. I imagine everyone will.
It's just you would do anything for them. And here's the other thing I notice is I see other CEOs, they will try to negotiate somebody's dream. They're like, maybe you shouldn't do that because it fits more like this. He never did that. So no matter how somebody presented their dream or what they wanted to do, he figured out a way that fit into the overall thing. The worst thing you can do as a leader or a manager is tell somebody their idea or perception is incorrect and they need to see the world the way you see it. Better to say, you know what? Oh, you want to do this and this. That fits in this way as well. And come together in a joint understanding that, you don't have to sacrifice anything. Why do people fear change? They feel like they're going to lose something. So when somebody tells you they have a dream or a goal or whatever, you just have to show them how they can get there. You don't want to negotiate them out of that because that's a core value for them. That's their being. How do you take that from somebody? It's going to cause resentment. It's going to cause, they're not going to look at you the same way. It's going to cause disagreement. And that gentleman, he was able to do that. No matter what that person's dream was, he was able to shape it into it and say, hey, yeah, you can accomplish all those things in this path. Mm. Just didn't put friction in there.
Yeah, that sounds good. It sounds like it was a hell of a good experience for multiple different reasons, that one. Sounds good.
Sure, for sure. And, you know, what's interesting, too, is many of the employees there, I'm not going to say all of them, they all loved him. But there was also people that didn't see the world the same way I did. So they didn't think he was a great CEO. He made a lot of mistakes. They only saw what they wanted to see. So you have to be okay with that, too. So just because I was in an environment like that doesn't mean that everybody that was in the environment got the same take that I did. So what I will tell people is this. If you feel like you're not getting something from your environment, do some inner perspective. What is it that you are filtering the information that's coming to you, and how are you actually translating that? Because I will tell you, he did a lot of things that I look back now and I'm like, I wouldn't have done that as a CEO. But I saw what he did great, and I took those good characteristics and I tried to embody in me, not what he did incorrectly, right? Does that make sense? Nobody's perfect.
Listen, that's your mindset all over there, mate. You look at stuff with a glass half full, and it has benefited you so far with everything you've done. You're taking the bits that are going to help you, and you're just rolling with it and moving forward. And I think it's so relevant to where the market is now, because with these layoffs and AI and stuff like that, I think some people are going to look at it all and go, God, this is terrible. Why is this happening to me? And blah, blah, blah. And I think they're going to really struggle with that sort of mentality. I think there's other people that are going to go, hang on. There's a real opportunity here. If I can really get to grips with the way this is going, and a bit of AI and a bit of this and a bit of that, I've really got an opportunity here to shine and move forward. And I'm seeing that with some of the placements we're doing now. Like, there's some people that are really grabbing it by the scruff of the neck and rolling with it, and they're doing well in their careers, and others just aren't. But I think that mentality you've got really plays into the good side. You see the good bits, and it allows you to move forward, mate. It's good. It's good.
Don't resist the universe. Embrace it, right? These things are coming. You can run from AI, but you can't hide. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
There will be some job reductions, and then there will be some job enablements, right? Because the people that embrace it, they'll learn how to use it as a tool for them to gain an advantage on things, right? It just is what it is. Stop trying to change the rules of the universe and just go with it and be like, oh, new rule. All right, I can use that rule this way. New thing. All right, I can use it that way. You just got to understand that there are things that are important and things you can control. And when they overlap, that's what you need to focus on. There's a lot of stuff that we don't get control of. And you just got to be like, yep, that's the rules of the game.
You're right. And I've heard this saying loads of times before, so maybe it's starting to get a bit overused, but I'll use it anyway. But people always say it's not going to be AI that takes anyone's job. It'll be someone using AI really well in a really efficient way, whether that's a business owner or a security engineer or a pen tech, whatever it is, it'll be someone who's actually willing to be adaptable, get with it, get focused, move on, and they're the people that are going to thrive and get rewarded. Whereas if you just sit around and come in.
From a very tactical standpoint, AI can generate code. Great. But somebody that's never generated code, can they actually string it together to make something useful? Now, think about it. A good software developer can now use AI to generate code at 100x the speed they used to be able to do. So that software engineer only has 24 hours in a day, and he probably only wants to work 16 maximum, but likely 8 hours, right? That's what they want to work. So think about 8 hours. I can now do 80 hours worth of work because I know what good looks like. I know what code looks like. I understand these things together, right? So if I use this tool, I can be 80 times more productive than anyone else. That doesn't mean that Bob at 7-Eleven or the corner store is going to become software developers because they don't know what good looks like. They can punch it in there and they can try to hack stuff together, but it's not going to be good. So your skill set is only being amplified, not replaced. Now, if you take it as a victim mindset, you will get replaced by the people that are amplifying their skill set. So just be that other guy or that other gal.
Yeah. Mate, when I hear you talking to that, I get really excited, mate. I think it's going to be brilliant. I just think it's going to be really good. But like I say, you've got to be on it. You've got to be adaptable. You've got to be willing to learn. You've got to be willing to put yourself out there. It's probably going to be an 8-hour day some days, but some days it probably is going to be a 16-hour day. If you've got to learn new skills and upskill and keep up with other people that are learning it and other people that are adaptable, yeah, you're probably going to have to pull some hard days, but it'll be a lot of fun and it'll be worth it.
Yeah. It's again, if your goals are lower, don't dedicate so much time. If your goals are higher, dedicate more time. How long is it going to take you? It takes the exact same amount of hours. Are you going to string it out 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for 10 years? Or are you going to do 16 hours a day, 7 days a week for two? You choose. It takes the exact same amount of work. You want to consolidate it or not? Time, build skills, and you just have to realize that. Like you're just not going to, through osmosis, absorb what you need to be successful.
Yeah, cool, mate. Cool. All right, mate. Jeremy, I want to talk about your stuff you do on LinkedIn and your personal brand. And I just want to cover about the, you started your own business and you then realized that you definitely weren't going to work part-time and you had more business than you knew what to do. So you were definitely cracking on. But what I want to talk about is, we'll come on to the personal branding stuff in just a moment, but starting a new business, or even people that have had a business for 5, 10, 15 years, a big thing is winning new business. So very quickly, you had a lot of business. How were you getting that business? Was there something you were doing that was different? Is there a silver bullet? I'm probably guessing there wasn't, but it'd be nice to hear how you were getting that business.
Yeah, so the personal brand thing, I don't even actually believe, I think is important. I just push it out, that kind of thing. There's no returning. I'm not getting business from that. I'm gaining relationships from that. People are coming, folks like you and things like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
But my company, how did it become successful? In the beginning, I tried to do it relationships first. That seeded my business. And then over delivering in those relationships, meeting the expectations of those customers, that kind of thing. Referrals are the most powerful thing that you can get. I had no salespeople in that stuff. Telling other companies, business owners, telling other business owners, you got to use this guy. You got to use this company for these things. Solve real problems. Don't sell anything. Solve their problem. Don't sell anything. That'll get you there. Now, when I transitioned into a real company, I started reading all these sales books and stuff, and I made all these crazy mistakes, right? I started getting into selling and my business just plateaued, right? Because I hired a sales team, SDRs. I started using social media marketing and cold calling and bombing them with emails and all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, this is going to be great. No, it like just, and I got some results. Like I tell you to do all those things. Where it changed again was, is then, okay, let's take what was making us successful, meeting and solving problems, and let's put it into our marketing messaging and let's deliver it in a manner that is not cold, not ugly. We don't need to send out a billion emails to an audience that doesn't do it, like figuring that out. And I read a book called Unreasonable Hospitality. And that book taught me a lot about being proactive and solving customers' problems, understanding that they view the world a little differently and doing that. So what I would say is this, we took all that, meshed it back together, and our referral program, our partner program is exploding like crazy, but we also do cold calling. We also do emailing and all that stuff there, but we do it with a proactive solution in mind. And I will tell you this, the other big thing that really changed a lot of stuff is you'll see that my company gives away all kinds of things that other companies charge for, right? Like in our solutions that we solve, there are problems like scoping and how do you navigate regulations and how do you do these things? We give it away in PDFs and in videos and things like that, because what we realized is, give all that value, it's an interesting trick. You give all this value, that person that absorbs that value is, man, this is good. You solved my one problem, but now I have another problem, which is the next stage. And who do I contact? The person that solved my problem. So now we get business from that. That's how we bring a lot of the cold stuff in. And we're unafraid of competitors stealing it. We're unafraid of that. Because what I tell them is, if they stole, that's cool. We developed that 2 years ago. They're 2 years behind. Steal everything. Focus on me, not the market. Because I'm the market. What is my current customer problems? Let's give that away. Let's solve that. That's what's really built it out. We do the selling stuff. We do the cold emails. We do that stuff, calling out, all that great stuff. And it's amplified it. But we do it in a non-sleazy way. We do it in a solve a problem way, right? All my salespeople, all my business development, my client success, all those people are always about like, why does the customer have this? Why does the potential customer have this problem? Why are they asking these questions? Let's solve that for them, right? Is it? And what's really interesting is when we were doing it the hard way, all my people always talked about price. Now, price never even comes into the thing. You're solving it, right? Then it's usually, if price comes into it, it's billing terms. Well, I can't afford all that up front. Can I pay that out? Like, we're not negotiating more, because they have a dream outcome and we're getting them to where they need to go. And we're doing what they needed to be done. And with the amount of effort and sacrifice that they're willing to get into it, right? So we've just built this thing, and it took 15 years to figure this out. Yeah. My business was very successful for 3 to 5 years when we were doing that hard selling, but we realized like we'd kill something, eat it, kill something, eat it, kill something. And we just didn't have that growth that we were looking for. We changed to solving the problems, giving away things, focusing on them, and it's growing. It's great. And I don't even believe I have it all figured out yet, because we're only 1/100th of the size of the company that I want to be. Right. So I'm like, I've got a lot more to learn.
Thanks, mate. And what I like about doing this podcast, I didn't realize this was going to happen at first, but what happens when you do a podcast like this is it ends up helping me, because I'm listening to you now going, oh, shit, I do that. Oh, shit, maybe I should change that. Yeah, we do the email campaigns and stuff like that, but we're probably going a bit. So essentially, you transition from a mentality of doing a good job, but trying to get some quick wins, whereas now you're more long-term approach, value adding, and probably a bit like we said about the hockey stick, then it's just flicked in and it's ended up better anyway.
Well, I have faith that the hockey stick is coming, right?
Yeah.
I believe we're in that part. Like, I just have faith. I know it's going to happen. Okay. And what I realized is, like, doing reps is what everybody tells you. How you build the skills, do the reps. If you do the same reps and you don't ever learn from your reps, you're going to get the same results. So for 2 to 3 years there, we were getting okay results. But we were like, oh, this is fine. We're going to break through. But we weren't observing the outcomes at the level of potential that we needed to. So we started to optimize. And we're like, oh, let's just take the top 10% of things that we do well and do them more and get rid of the other 90. And that's where we learned, oh, give away value. There's a Vaynerchuk or whatever. He talks about, like, give, take, or give, ask. And I think I changed it to, I just give and give until somebody beats down the door and says, give me something. Let me buy something. We just build it that way. We just try to solve as much problems as we can. We have lost leaders on purpose. Like, we, like, literally, because we believe in the outcome that's going to happen there. So I would say just reps count, but evaluate what those reps are getting you. And are you incrementally improving? So be critical about it. Because we did the same thing for a guy 2 and 3 years and we got the same kind of results and my company plateaued. When we started evaluating, we changed some things and we're like, oh, we're still doing all those reps. We're still doing the cold call and the marketing, but are you truly evaluating the marketing for what it's telling you? Or are you negotiating with yourself saying, oh, I just need to do more of this thing and not improve it? So you got to look at stuff with an objective's eye and a critical eye. And sometimes when you get into that, one of the best things you could do is go find somebody else is doing it or successful and say, hey, look at this. What would you say? And without trying to sell it to them, right? Because the other thing, when we present stuff to people, we're like, hey, we've done this and we believe the outcomes. Just say, hey, look, this is what we're doing, is the outcomes. What do you think? And just hear this raw output. And you're like, holy crap, they see the world totally different. I did not think of this, right? It's when we try to sell them on why we're right and we don't like the results. Stop. You got to get humble. You got to be like, you know what? They're wrong. I don't have a $1 billion company yet. So I don't know. What does it cost me? Like, whatever that gap is. I don't have that skill yet. So, Doug, tell me what.
Yeah, no, thanks, mate. Yeah, I think one thing about being a business man is it's got a habit of humbling everyone, I think. So, yeah, it can bring you back down, especially when you just start doing really well and it's bang, it's, oh, no.
That's dangerous, right? Because it's hard to learn from success. It's easy to learn from failure, or what we call those lesson learns. But when you're successful and it's overnight, you're like, was it my socks? What if, like, you get the lucky socks. You're like, I'm going to wear my blue socks every day now, because every time I do, I close these $1 million deals. And it's not that. You did something there. And it's hard to learn from success.
Yeah, Nicole. I'll tell you what I like, because when you mentioned sort of value-adding approach, and then you've got the sort of clients, they're not even asking about the price. And I found that if you can get people, you know what it's like as entrepreneurs, the customers that want everything for nothing, they're always the worst customers. They're always twice the work, this, that, and the other. Something, it's always the customer that wants everything for really cheap. Whereas the customer that's willing to pay a higher price, I find it's normally easier to deal with. But when you can get them coming to you, or you can do that value-adding approach, yes, it's more long-term. But again, if you can go through that pain and have the patience and the grind and delay the gratitude, yeah, it's much nicer on the other side. But I think most people don't do it because, again, people want the quick wins.
Our quick wins really win. You got to think about that. So when we sell cybersecurity, we were trying to sell to some companies. And you got to look at them. You're like, oh, they're smaller businesses. You're like, oh, we could solve their problems. I would appreciate that problem being solving, because they're just trying to grow their business. And revenue is the big deal for them. And bottom line, net profits, right? So you're a cost associated with it. You are now fighting against what they're trying to achieve. So you just have to realize that, like, in the maturity of the maturation of that company, that mindset is not there. Now, the one right above it, which is maybe a smaller, medium-sized business, where I need to protect my assets because I built these things, those are people you need to talk to. But we forget to look at the real from the customers that we're selling to. So we're like, everybody should buy this because it's great. And you're like, no. Now think about this. Were you going to buy it when you had no profits? No. You're like, I need to make my business grow. I'm going to invest in marketing. I'm going to invest in sales. I'm going to do these things. I'm not going to buy cybersecurity. That's a cost. I could risk it. It's a risk worth taking. When those people actually buy it, you've convinced them to do something that they weren't all in on. And guess what? They're going to question every dollar value that you get from it. The people that you solve the problem for that are like, hey, I got bigger things to go fry. They're not microscoping. They're like, did I get what I paid for? Yes. Awesome. Are you over? Great. They don't get into it. But the people that are like, I don't know if I really should have bought this, or this is really solving the problem for you. And you've convinced them, they're going to be a trouble customer. So what I tell my sales guys is this is, stop worrying about the no's. If there are no, just, hey, did you solve the problem? And then they will tell you whether or not they want to buy. It's fine. Solve the problem. Don't sell it.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It goes back to just taking a longer-term approach, mate, doesn't it? Sticking to it. Yeah, it's good.
And talking to the right people, right? Convincing folks that their view of the world is wrong is impossible. And that's what salespeople try to do sometimes. Sometimes you got to be like, hey, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think part of what being a good salesperson is to your point, mate, knowing when not to sell. And like you say, knowing when to walk away and get onto the next lead. Because, a lot of people do. They just try. You're just like literally banging your head against a brick wall if you can't read it. Jeremy, on LinkedIn, you have got a personal brand, mate. I don't think you haven't, but I promise you, mate, you have. And I tell you, no, you have, mate. And it's a good one. And I call it like making whatever level you're at, whether you're at your level as an entrepreneur and business owner or whether you're a junior breaking in. I think making your resume 3D and having that personal brand is huge. And I saw something the other day that something like 80% of people that are consuming your content don't actually engage with it. So we're all probably reaching a lot more people than we think. Your sales team are reaching out to people. I bet they check you out and see what you're all about and they get a real feel. You can feel the sort of person you are from your profile. And it's one of the reasons, like I say, we connected on LinkedIn so nicely because of that. I think it's really important, really big. I don't imagine you were shy about getting started, mate. So I won't even ask you, what, did you just get up one day and decide to post? Or was it a bit of a transitional phase or what went down?
So one of the injustices I have done that some of my mentors have pointed out is they're like, Jeremy, you seek out all this information, but what are you sharing? And I'm like, oh, I never thought about it that way. I am consuming, but what am I giving? And I was like, let me just try some things. Let me just some random, not have any real objective other than, hey, I learned this, or this was my thought for the day, or these are the types of things that I'm thinking about, or this is the advice I have, or I read this book and this has happened. And I just started sharing stuff. And it was like once a week. And then it became more structured. And now I try to do 5 days a week. I actually create my content a week or two in advance sometimes and stuff. Like I'm a little more methodical about it because I feel like, now that I've given it, like I can be structured and people can depend on me to push that message and things like that. So I built a system around it now where I share. So I've got like this list of things that I want to cover and I just, it's growing and growing. Like, oh, I'm going to talk about this one day. I'm going to talk about this and that kind of stuff. And that's actually how it came to be. But it was mentors in front of me that said, you get a lot of, and I didn't realize it, but I get a lot of joy with sharing with folks and just interacting and seeing people work. And they're like, why don't you just put that out there? Because the real would probably appreciate it. And I was like, okay, let's try it. And I do it with mask. You won't see anything where I'm like, hey, buy this or do that. Like, I don't push. One of the things that I'm pondering right now is this is I'm sharing a lot of business advice. And I'm trying to figure out, like, how do I also share some of my cybersecurity experience? Because I've got 30 years in that, too. How do I mix the two? But I don't want to mess up the audience and, like, segregate it and stuff. It's a struggle I'm trying to figure out with. But maybe in the next year or so, you'll see me add some of that kind of content to it, too.
Yeah, you're good, mate. Because I think it was on Sunday, I commented, because you're pretty lively on there. I was impressed because I think it was like Sunday. I was like just sat around and I saw some things. So I commented on it and you were like, bang. I was like, oh, wicked. It's definitely you behind that profile. I can tell.
It is me. I do queue up content, right? Like I'm not going to fake that. I don't have time every single day to post or whatever. So what I do is I use a program. I type all the stuff that I want in there. I create what I want to and I just schedule it. But it is me. I don't have anybody else doing it for me. And when I see somebody interact, I'm like, you know what? They reached out and they have something in their head. And you know what? I trigger something. Let me help them if I can, right?
No, it's good, mate. It's good. I like having the images on there as well. It's just good, mate. It's good. But Jeremy, mate, I knew with us, mate, that it would whiz by. This episode's been an hour's gone very quick, mate. I still don't even feel like we've covered everything, but it's been really good. And I love just like tapping into you. To your mindset, and you've helped me listening to you. You've energized me, so I know when this goes out, you're going to energize the listeners, mate. Thanks, mate. Do you think we could probably do another hour, but do you think we've done all right?
I think we've done great. I think it's been great. I hope that the audience gets something from it. Like, it's good. Yeah. If you want to do another round, I'm for it. I'm okay with sharing. Mm-hmm. But I think we got some good content here. I'd have to go back and think about what all we did here, but there's always something to be learned from anything. And I appreciate your podcast. I appreciate what you're doing. And you're making an impact too, Thomas, whether you know it or not.
Thank you, mate. Thank you, mate. I know you're mega busy with multiple businesses being ran and so on and so forth. So thanks for your time, mate. And thanks again, buddy.
Yeah, thank you. And thank the listeners as well. Appreciate it.